Lights, camera, action.
Okay, yeah, welcome. So hi, everyone. A warm welcome here to our stage today. It's Lauren Hawker-Zaffer, and I welcome you back to Redefining AI, or welcome you to Redefining AI, the tech podcast. Now, I'm an educator, and I'm taking you on an educational exploration into the fascinating minds of those that embody and forefront all you need to know about artificial intelligence, machine learning, the insight era, and insight engines. Now, today, I am hosting an extra special session because we're here from the podcast show in London and we're doing a live session. And we're discussing the coronation of AI. So the palpable excitement that is happening and the endless opportunities of creative collaboration that it is offering. Now, Redefining AI, we like to evoke critical thought and we like to ensure that there is empowerment through conversation. So to do this, I've been joined by two expert guests, namely David Segura and Sean King. Now, David is the CEO of Glassbox Media and Sean is the Senior Vice President and General Manager of Commercial Enterprise Veritone. So welcome to this session today. We're really excited and happy that we can have this discussion with you. So let's start, namely, David, Sean, can you tell us a little bit about yourselves? And can you also tell us what excites you about this technological revolution that's happening at the moment and the creative opportunities that it's bringing with it?
I'll go first. Well, a little technical difficulty. We wouldn't be about talking about AI without any form of tech difficulties. Veritone is we're an artificial intelligence software company, and we build applications and workflows to utilize AI to, you know, supercharge your organization, so to speak, depending on if you're looking to create new content, to manage content, even to monetize content. Those are kind of the areas that, you know, we focus on. And I'm excited about the possibility of what AI and machine learning presents to the broader creator community, in addition to all of the economic supply chain that supports the creator community. Mm-hmm. Because despite what anyone you may read or says, this is not here to displace work. It is here to accelerate work. And if leveraged appropriately, just that ability to create, manage, and monetize. It's an exciting time for creators to take advantage of.
Very much so. And I'm sure we'll go into the intrinsics of that in a minute. Thanks.
And just to add to that, I'm David Segura. I'm an entrepreneur based in New York. My company is called Glassbox Media. And the best way to describe ourselves is essentially almost like a music label, but for podcast hosts. So once someone hits that tipping point, they've already built themselves a nice career, but need help accelerating that to increase brand partnerships, but also think of new ways to monetize, whether that's adaptations, subscriptions, you name it. We kind of help them with that, invest in them, offer them minimum guarantees, things like that. So when I think of AI, I'm excited, obviously, you know, but I do also worry. It's my job as an entrepreneur. I do agree with you. It's an accelerant. It's going to make work better rather than displace people, but it certainly will displace companies. So I can tell you right now that between myself, my team, our investors, we're thinking really hard about how to leverage that. So I'm pretty excited about, you know, what we're going to talk about today, some of the things that have worked for us and some of the things that haven't worked as well. And maybe we can get some feedback from the audience as well.
Excellent. So we've got two representative angles that we can certainly look at in the conversation. So I think that the first thing that I want to prominate is obviously AI in the public consciousness. So AI has become quite a prominent force. And the reason that it's burst into public consciousness is with the launch, as we know, of ChatGPT. So ChatGPT, for those that are certainly not familiar with it, it's a chatbot that's powered by a large language model. It was made by OpenAI, and this prominence happened at the end of sort of 2022. Now, we know that around 2010, it became quite visible, more visible. It was certainly accessible, and we interact and still interact on a daily basis with a number of AI applications. So we're looking at virtual assistants, we're looking at personalized recommendations, fraud detection, automation, automated vehicles, things that we're very familiar with. So the first question that I want to pose is, what is different about this new AI, this new revolution? And how is it redefining the previously defined boundaries in terms of accessibility and capabilities?
At least for me, it just seems much more in your face. In other words, ChatGPT 4, the new version, is incredible. It's accessible to everyone. There's interns on our team, junior level staffers that are leveraging it to come up with better copy and headlines more quickly. So the changes have been pretty quick, if incremental, at least within the company. And when I think about stuff I've seen in the past leveraging AI, like as an investor, invested some interesting companies that are doing things with this as well. But it seems to be almost in the background. You know, it's like very much a B2B operation. It's less sexy, for lack of better terms. And I've been shocked, frankly, by how quickly everyday users or entrepreneurs are now leveraging AI in their business operations. And so it makes me wonder, like, what will happen next in the next 6 months, let alone several years.
Mm-hmm. Can you maybe comment a little bit on what you think has made it so accessible?
Mainly the consumer interface. Like, I can't speak for everyone here, but at least for me, I'm a visual person. The better the UX, the easier it is to leverage something, I'll do that. Ironically enough, I'm not afraid to say that even though I'm a so-called tech CEO, not exactly super techie. I'm a little bit of a late adopter, and I've always felt more comfortable once it becomes easy to use. So now that it is, it's something that we're leveraging in our everyday operation, and we're now thinking about taking potentially bigger gambles, working a little bit more with our podcast host to try to actually increase output, which for us is very much correlated to revenue. So it's pretty exciting.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Sean, what are your thoughts on that, about the accessibility?
I mean, what OpenAI did, candidly, was brilliant from those because it's the chat interface to a large language model, but large language models have been around for a decade plus. Mm-hmm. They've been around for a long time. But the user interface that was built to make that so accessible, to be able to show that, I mean, it really, talk about capturing the zeitgeist of what that can be. I mean, that was, you know, one of the most brilliantly run go-to-market to get user adoption in the history of tech that's ever done. I mean, it would be tough to beat going forward. But to that point, like that accelerant that it provided to the community and the crash course that it required for it opened up a lot of concerns because you could see people's kids using it. How are they using it to write papers or were they doing something else? Like you with all the good uses came all the bad uses and obviously created like this mass confusion of what it could be. But there are some, you know, legitimate concerns that can come from that for the accessibility standpoint is also like how you're controlling the information that comes on. Mm-hmm. You know, if you go onto a Google search, you're at least getting 10, 15 results that you can pick and choose from. When you go into OpenAI, they're giving you one result. The accessibility side of it is unmatched mm-hmm. because they're there, but then the control of the information brings another concern.
Mm-hmm. What about then the capabilities from a generative perspective? Because obviously OpenAI, ChatGPT, GPT-4, we're talking about the generative capabilities of the AI. What do you think this is going to have the most effect on? And obviously from an investment perspective as well. I mean, interestingly enough, we saw that in about 2012, there was a rise in generative AI investment back then. And now we're looking at what a market cap of, you know, what's the interest around the generative AI from a capabilities perspective as well.
On our side, this is what we're thinking about. And I'm not sure what the implications are, you know, ethically, what we're supposed to label, we're supposed to call out. So we haven't really rolled this out as aggressively as we want to, but we think we will in the future. What we're thinking about doing is working with some of our creators who are a bit more entrepreneurial and maybe having them run these scripts and their shows, if you will, through the technology. So we can figure out not just how to generate like additional new scripts, but we're even experimenting with like voice imitation. There's vendors that are doing that I swear sound exactly like almost any given host. And the implications for us are really kind of twofold. Should we, you know, have a disclaimer basically saying this show was, you know, obviously edited by humans, but maybe generated by AI largely rather than, let's say, the Crawl Space team, you know, which is a very popular true crime podcast. On the flip side, too, when I think of, you know, your agency and different brands, do we also need to like call that out? In other words, if they paid for an ad host, essentially a host read advertisement, even if it sounds exactly perfectly and it's been approved necessarily by the agency, is that different somehow than, you know, like a human generated one? I mean, I think the short answer, and I don't know what the right answer is yes, but I've heard some pretty interesting counterarguments saying that no, it's one and the same, especially if it's overseen or edited ultimately by humans. So it's kind of mind-blowing that this is actually a thing that we're talking about like right now. I couldn't imagine that we would have been talking about this last year.
And that kind of, on the host standpoint, goes into the accessibility standpoint. You know, for these hosts and groups and doing that, you know, the limitations for the scalability is the person themselves. But that individual or that host as a brand, you know, that being able to leverage that, I mean, I would argue that, yeah, they kind of can be viewed as one and the same. But I mean, to your point on, you know, the generative side of it, I mean, it's a very broad term to call a lot of different things that are existing together. You could put, you know, synthetic voice as generative. You could do, you know, image creation, everything for those. I mean, really what it is it's chain cognition. It's different forms of, you know, machine learning and outputs that are coming that are being gen together. one of the things that we always advise on is like, if you're going out there thinking that generative AI is going to be your end all be all and it's going to solve it, like, just stop. It's not. But it can get you 50, 60, 70, 80% of the way there. But it's never going to be able to solve for the human subjectivity of what you're trying to accomplish and what you're trying to do, both from a written perspective, from an audio perspective, from a visual perspective. But if, to that same point, if it can produce, you know, 15 different scripts variations for you at those, you know, you're not then sitting there writing the time and spending the time. You get to now spend your time thinking about, okay, well, what is my story going to look like? How did this get me and accelerate me a little bit in my process? But like but it shouldn't be your full process.
Yeah, and I think that that's an excellent segue onto the next point. So it's really about the success and the public prominence and how we can empower creators, how we can empower users. So we can see that the success and the public prominence of especially generative AI, it's certainly, as you've mentioned, it's empowering a lot of people at the end, sort of the end user. And we can see that there's, in certain respect, it's opened up a lot of possibilities that enhance our own capabilities up to tenfold. When we're looking at it from a perspective of a creative ally, what particular elements of generative AI can we use to empower ourselves as creators? I mean, maybe things like dynamic content generation, we're looking at interactive and immersive elements. You touched upon maybe AI personas, which we'll certainly discuss in detail, but how can a creator empower themselves and use it as a creative ally?
I mean, I think it's, again, it should be the ultimate tool in your like creative toolbox, but it shouldn't be your only tool. I mean, you're talking about accessibility. I mean, if you spent all this time and you've created this great content, the ability to be able to take that, to translate that, to be able to regenerate that in English or French or Spanish or English, the other ones, you're broadening your reach, you're making your content more accessible. You're able to grow your community more by just making those. I mean, that's a low-hanging fruit opportunity for it that's there. And one of those other areas of it here is again, we're talking about OpenAI, and that's a very broad large language model. There is that possibility and capabilities right now to create domain-specific language models. So creators, companies, organizations that have tons and tons of content that they've created over the time, you know, that's their IP, that's theirs. I mean, I think that's one of the concerns around generative, obviously, is the licensing and the IP protection of what's being generated and who truly has ownership of that. But you have the ability to create your own knowledge graph that's based off your content, your writings, your IP, that you can kind of create almost your own containerized versions of these things to just empower what you're going to do and making sure that's also safe and IP protected for what is yours.
Yeah, that touches on so many great points. And so I'll just say two things. In terms of IP protection, one thing I will call out is this. We've all been like mesmerized by that Drake song. It was actually pretty good. Several of them. They're amazing. But I will say people underestimate how difficult it is to like have discovery around media. And I can tell you podcasting especially is very difficult to build from ground up. In other words, zero listeners to several hundred thousand or even millions. So I'm less worried about that. But what I am worried about is like not moving fast enough. So as an example, more sensible members of our team want to focus on kind of that lower hanging fruit. In other words, we are going to do, like, for example, Practical Stoicism, the podcast in Spanish and in French using largely AI. I think that's obviously something that's low hanging fruit and we're going to do it. But what I'd like to figure out is if we can actually essentially run the scripts, create new content that would resemble something that Tanner Campbell, for example, would produce on his own. And then basically with his intervention and production, can we actually release this to essentially double the content output, which would, in theory, double the revenue? That's obviously difficult. I can tell you right now, a lot of our creators aren't behind that. They think that minimizes like what they're doing as storytellers. But we do need to figure out a way to kind of test this and to see if there's actually like something behind it. So when I think about content generation, that's what we're thinking about. We're wondering like what's the difference between something like that and something that's been painstakingly, you know, labored over in the normal fashion.
Yeah. I mean, it leads us on as well. And it's the whole question of being able to encapture and make sure that you're holding on to the humanity, the human aspect, the genuine creative instinct. And that comes with, we've just seen recently as well that Joe Rogan, he's also created an AI persona. And one thing that generative AI does and it allows us to really do is we can capture this opportunity that's presented with AI to create an AI persona. Maybe we can just touch upon what is actually an AI persona. There's multiple different interpretations, so maybe we can clarify the term. And with creators, what should remain with creative instinct and what should we push with technology when creating an AI persona?
Well, I mean, to that persona-wise, I mean, it is a, you know, a digital version of yourself, but I would say a verified, authentic digital version of yourself. You know, the thing that is both powerful and scary at the same time is that anyone right now can go out and create Joe Rogan's voice or create a clone of Joe Rogan without doing those. You know, and there's concerns about that and just how that's going to be used in media and those. So, I mean, our, you know, what we advise a lot of our groups are, and companies and partners on is, if you're a person of relevance and prominence and a creator and this is how you make your living, you need to effectively own your clone. Because in real life, we have protections around our IP, our associated assets. And in any of these kind of digitally immersive environments, I mean, and I'd even consider online a digitally immersive environment, let alone, you know, a metaverse type world out there. But I'm just even talking about today. You know, the same things that we expect in life, we should be able to expect in these digital environments. That's, you know, protection of ourselves, our IP, and our assets. And, you know, I live in California, but in California, New York, Chicago, many areas in the States, you know, your voice is also a part of your IP, and it is your it is a personal identifiable information on that is those. And so someone going and taking that is actually infringing upon your rights and your representation of yourself. So if these ones here, and we're not talking, these are not very expensive to go in and create and doing those things, but everyone should have their ability to be able to have their kind of like, this is my authenticated clone. And that it's being used for these purposes. That's there because anything else from that is, it can be troublesome for them.
I guess it all depends though too, because I mean, fair use, comedy, that's something that some of our own creators have done, like without AI. And so there's a little bit of like a kind of a gray area or sticky area that certainly would be a cause for concern in the future. I'm sure we're going to run into this like headlong soon enough. But when I think about personas too, I can't remember who it was. I don't know if you all remember, but Joe Rogan, if you will, interviewed someone, like a historical character.
Steve Jobs.
Steve Jobs, there you go. And I heard that it was off. I didn't listen to it, but they said it was amazing. And content like that is pretty interesting. It's just a question of who controls it. In other words, if Joe Rogan, for example, monetizes that, maybe that's cool. But then does he owe something to the Jobs estate? I'm not really sure what the answer is. And so a lot of fascinating questions. There's different uses, I think, for personas. But the number one thing we're thinking about as a business, obviously, is the business applications and how to leverage that. And also how to prevent ourselves from getting into trouble. Because I can tell you, I love our hosts, but I'm very concerned that some of them will kind of push the boundaries for artistic reasons. And we might end up like in a situation where we could infringe. It's not a statement of guilt, just thinking out loud.
I mean, it's definitely interesting because then it comes into the whole perspective of the psychological attachment to what is a product of technology and what is a unique, genuine personality that is created by an individual. If you look at also the commercial opportunities, I mean, we're talking about hyper-personalization. How can a creator sort of commercialize on creating an AI persona? If we can maybe lay out a few things that would be easy opportunities for commercialization.
Right, I'm saying that. Advertising. I mean, incredibly low-hanging fruit. And I would say even for the AI, let's take a professional athlete of any sorts that does a lot of different brand endorsements and everything else. Like their brand as an individual, their brand apex every year is in season. It's but also when they're in season, their accessibility is at its lowest as it's out throughout the year. And so if you want to think about, you know, those opportunities where if you're a brand or company, like how can I take advantage of these, you know, that is a great opportunity where in which like AI could power these type of endorsements, either just voice or audio or a digital persona to be able to do that, because, you know, you want to take advantage of those when they're at their height of that. And that's to me an easy one.
Yeah.
But I do want to break something down though, because I have had a lot of questions just from people in the space and even some of our investors, just to give an illustration. Like there's obviously a lot of creators and, you know, podcast executives right now outside in the crowd. If you're a new podcast, leveraging AI can be interesting. It might even make your operation more efficient. But at the same time, the real commercial opportunity, again, comes from the listeners. So when I was saying earlier, like content output, the reason that's valuable, so you have 1 million listeners, let's say you have 8 ad spots within that. If you could somehow theoretically double your content output, you've significantly increased your revenue opportunity. Respectfully, even if you're kicking ass and loving what you're doing, you have 1,000 listeners a month, the commercial application really isn't there. So I will say, like, I've seen some AI being leveraged in podcasting in a novel, but frankly, gimmicky way. And then I've also seen quite a lot of use cases kind of on the back end for creative titling, things like that. But the next, I guess, frontier is if someone has a great brand, like, I guess, yeah, Joe Rogan or, you know, one of the Lemonada podcasts, something like that, are they willing to kind of take some reputational risk and actually start to genuinely increase content output leveraging AI? I have to admit, I think people have been a little scared of doing that. I think we have as well. But I think someone's eventually going to start doing that and potentially getting that right. And that's where the real commercial application will be seen.
Yeah, definitely. Certainly would agree with that. So let's do a full circle, like a sort of loop back to what we spoke about at the start with accessibility. So there is obviously certain challenges that come hand in hand when something hits the mainstream. It becomes accessible to everyone. And that is obviously the challenges, the ethical considerations, the technological revolution that's causing us to question. Where should there be a group identification and addressment of making sure that we're not promoting a lack of diversity, that we're promoting inclusion, that we're making sure that there's a mixed representation for something that doesn't become a societal norm because we have the access to speed up content creation. We have the access to multiply our personalities, to multiply our identities without going anywhere into like a metaverse digital space, but just simply through large language models.
You know, it's just an interesting question. And the reason like I say that is that just last week, I was filling out some documentation with one of our other co-founders to, I guess, officially enlist Glassbox Media as a minority-owned company, which in theory entitles us, I think, to more spending from some of the larger media agencies in the United States, at least. But I can tell you firsthand that like it's a difficult question, right? I mean, I'm I guess, Hispanic, but also part Portuguese, also part Irish. I grew up in a place that was almost predominantly Mexican, so I never really realized I was a minority until I went to college. So I don't know. I think I believe in diversity and those initiatives, but it is difficult sometimes to tell like how much backing there is for that or even if it's a good thing. Because offhand, I'm not going to say who, but one of the large media agencies said, in theory, we spend 5%, but we don't actually track that. So I can't tell you that we're doing that. And I was like, okay, yeah, at least you're honest with me behind the scenes. So that's cool.
I mean, there's a couple. I mean, that's a very...
It's a big question.
It's a big question, and it's a very broad assessment. Let's all look at it in two folds. Like, diversity is incredibly important just for, you know, bringing the right thoughts to the table and bringing the right things, but also thinking about everything from how it's going to be from a regulation standpoint, you know, and one that's biggestly, you know, coming from an AI and tech company, one of the biggest obstacles we've had to have is like, there are certain AI models that are inherently biased, and it's because it's the data set that they're trained on. So, you know, you have to proactively combat that from a training standpoint. So, you know, whenever and we're working with an organization and they're coming through and like, okay, how are we going to leverage this into our community, into our group? We have to start with some of the more difficult questions, like right off the bat as like, well, what are your goals in this area? What are you trying to accomplish? And what are you trying to have? And, you know, and then what are the lines that you're not going to cross? And how are we going to be able to do? Because you have to actually think about these as parameters in which you're building and programming against. Because, you know, machines are trained to do what you train the machine to do. And they're amazing and they're powerful in doing those things. But if you're not going into that process with an open mind and a large amount of depth and breadth to how you're going to go in and train these models, you can quickly find out yourself like, oh man, we're in a problem here. But I mean, one of the things that's exciting about that, there's been a lot of groups out there that have, you can go in and have all of your models and everything actually gone through and not interrogated, but basically validated that there are no biases in your models for those here. So, I mean, if anyone is out there and they're looking and they're experimenting these ways, I mean, these are the questions that you need to ask the vendors and the partners that you're talking to. Because like if they're not or if they haven't been, you know, that can be a representation of yourself. Because if you're bringing those tools and you're bringing those things in your organization, you know, there could potentially be helping in you produce your output. And if there are some of those things in there, you may not realize that you're bringing that into your organization.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's certainly a point for strong consideration. And there's a lot of people that will underline and highlight the importance of a clean machine learning ops cycle to ensure that there is the reduction of biases in the training sets. But there's many others that would fundamentally argue that it's impossible that you can eradicate biases because humans bring so many biases with them as well. What's your opinion on that? I mean, do you think it's possible to eradicate all biases, especially when they're brought into training sets, despite
short answer, probably not.
Validation.
I know it wasn't as serious technology as OpenAI's, technology, but many years ago, not too many years ago, Microsoft introduced something which was, I guess, accidentally or inadvertently racist. I think because it was being trained like in real time, some jokesters with, I guess, like real CI capability ended up kind of making it so. So it wasn't exactly evolved into that. Maybe it was kind of like forced into that. But I think these are important things to think about. I mean, I know there are things as such things as cultural bias, but I don't know. I just think of like the US, for example, love it, but there's just really no consensus. So when I wonder like, you know, who's policing the bias, et cetera, I can tell you even some lovely people that I get along with really well, the minute we start talking about like diversity or inclusion, they get really defensive. And so it's just a subject that I've like kind of moved away from to some extent, but I do agree it's incredibly important. I just don't know where to start from like a consensus standpoint.
Yeah.
It's hard in that because, and I don't mean this to be jokingly, but it's almost like a game of whack-a-mole that you're coming to those, because what is considered bias today, 2 years from now, what are we talking about then? And what are the changes there? I mean, that's the wonderful and challenging thing about us as humans, is that like we're always changing, we're always evolving, and so do the things that we love and care about and fight for. Those have changed over the course of time too. So this is, again, it's making sure that you're constantly and continually evolving along that with that, because as things will change, like everything we use to support this is going to have to change with it.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I don't want to take the conversation into a pessimistic direction or a negative direction, but we touched upon briefly regulation, which has been heavily spoken about in the mass media as well. Not only that, but there's a lot of European acts that are in full force or going into sort of end stages around AI regulation. If we think from both of your perspectives about the future and the developments that you've just spoken about, I mean, a lot of AI organizations at the moment, they're working with reinforcement learning to ensure that humans are still in control of what's being developed. But is there something that particularly scares you, especially with the call for such strong regulation in the AI space, that you see maybe deep sort of dampening empowerment?
Yeah, I mean, I think the most basic one is that we don't really know what it's going to be yet. Force for good, force for bad, somewhere in between more likely. So I always like respectfully think it's interesting that European regulators always jump so quickly to regulate something. I think in the US, they're not exactly doing a great job sometimes, but they're deliberately slow. You know, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, they recognize that overregulation is a thing too. So as an example, take Grimes, the former partner of Elon Musk. She basically put out a call to action, which is that if anybody wants to leverage AI to like remix or remake my music in any way, that's fine. Here's like a standard agreement. We'll split it 50-50. I don't know if that's brilliant or foolish, but it's something. And I think there's a variety of ways to like tackle this and leverage it. I understand like kind of Universal freaking out over Drake. It's probably their job. They need to like be strong. But at the same time, this could end up being a good thing because again, the winners usually control distribution. I have to think Universal will be a winner. So I think, regulators' heart is probably in the right place, but this needs to play out some more. And so my fear, ironically, would be that we rush to judgment too quickly because this is a really kind of complex subject that's evolving very, very fast.
Okay. Yeah.
No, I agree on that point. Mm-hmm. Like we don't necessarily need to rush to overregulate it at the moment. Again, everything that's been happening right now in the quote unquote generative is not new. It's been around for a while. It's just the accessibility of it is there. But what will keep me up at night is if I ask one of my IoT devices, or if I go on to do that and it's going like, okay, well, who should I vote for president? And it is then giving you a recommendation of those from those. Like, that's some of the things that will keep me up at night from that, because that's where it gets scary. And of those points here, and you want to talk about, putting the power of many into the hands of a few, these are some of those things that I think is one of, if there's a reason for those, like there are some reasons for why there should be regulation, mm-hmm. but within boundaries.
Nice. Yeah. So we've certainly been able to bring in a few thoughts for consideration today here in the session. And I want to thank you all for joining us today. It was hosted by Redefining AI, the tech podcast. I'd like to thank both you, Sean and David, for the insightful information. And maybe if you'd like to share anything of empowerment or encouragement with the audience before we end.
Experiment. you know, be bold and have, but just again, go into it thinking of like, what are the lines I'm not going to cross and what do I really want to do and how am I going to use this? But also more importantly, like, where do I struggle within my project? Like if I could take out these 10 hours a week that I'm working on this period of it, what could I do with it? Like, that's the question you should ask first. It's like, okay, if I can get those 10 hours back, how much more can I create? Or how much more thought am I allowing myself to think about to be able to create and do that? You know, start there. Everyone tends to jump to the flashy things that we see on LinkedIn or social media or Twitter. Like, oh, look at the stuff that I created. I mean, those are little fun things, but that's the, you're not seeing massive commercial. I mean, those things that you're seeing, they're cool, but you're not seeing tens of millions of dollars attached to these things. So think about it from your organization of like, where am I struggling and where can I look for areas of improvement? And then those are where you should start you're asking the questions.
Great advice.
I guess the only thing I'd add is just typical American, push boundaries. Maybe we can hold ourselves accountable. Maybe this year, next year, we'll have done something good. Maybe Glassbox will have gotten in trouble. And I hope I can say the same thing for you as well.
Thank you.